Welcome to the Church Strengthening Podcast, brought to you by the Grand Crossings Baptist Association, located in the heart of Missouri, in the counties of Audrain and Callaway, where churches are working together to advance the kingdom of Christ. I'm your host, Preston Thompson, Director of Missions for Grand Crossings, and I'm joined in the studio today with some good friends. So please pay attention and learn how we can grow together as churches.
Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Again, with the guys in the studio. Again, introduce yourself because they might be new.
Hey, I'm Martin Stukenborg, Associate Pastor of First Baptist Fulton and Pastor of the South Calvary Community Church.
And how do you do both of those things? I'm L.P. Cook. I'm the Associate Pastor at Union Hill Baptist Church in Holt Summit.
I'm Will Hoffman, Pastor of Rising Sun Baptist Church.
I'm Brad Kerr, Associate Pastor at First Baptist Church in Fulton.
And I'm Preston Thompson, Director of Missions for Grand Crossings Baptist Association. Pastor of the pastors is what they tell me. But today, I'm just an observer. I want to hear what you guys got to say.
Now, somebody told me to bring in my boxing gloves. Is that what I'm supposed to do today?
Right.
Sure, yeah.
Right here.
MMA.
Right, yeah. We're no sissy boxing gloves, man. We're just going to toe-to-toe. Right, no, we're talking about stuff we disagree about and how we should go about that. The body of Christ has at no time ever been in complete agreement on every subject.
Well, I disagree about that.
Wow.
Yes.
Our lesson from the Gospel Project in Sunday School this last weekend was when the church divided over Paul or Peter or Apollos or whatever. Yep. It started pretty early.
Yeah, well, in Acts chapter 6, the Hebraic widows and the Grecian,
yeah,
the Hellenistic widows, that's mm-hmm. a division. I heard Mark Dever, I believe, was the first guy I heard say about that. He said, this is a division. It's a moment in the early church where, and I think this is instructive for this podcast, he said, the outside observers are looking at it saying, the gospel better be bigger than this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that's it. So let's, we thought about this ahead of time. We're just going to make a list, and we'll all have suggestions, I'm sure, of things that church people disagree about. And I mean, obviously, we disagree about some things outside the church, but just inside the church, I think, what kind of things do we disagree about? We disagree about music style. Brad, you've never run into that, have you?
No.
No. Of course not.
Or even just specific songs.
Right?
Just, yeah.
We disagree about how the end times are going to play out. Right? Where we put the millennium, what is a millennium, is there even a real millennium? I mean, there's all kinds of things. Where does the church go in relation to the rapture and the tribulation? When does the rapture happen? We divide up in camps. We just divide that thing down. What are some other things we mentioned? The
Bible translations.
Bible translations, yes. Right. Which one is the best, you know?
Mine.
What's that? Oh, yours? Yeah.
Like your personal translation?
That's the answer.
Preston's translation.
That's the answer in always. The best one is the one I use, right? And this is probably a subject for a subsequent podcast, but very prominent in our denomination is the idea of the doctrines of grace or Calvinism, Reformed theology, whatever that might go under. There are just a ton of things that we get balled up about. Women in ministry. What roles are available for women? What roles are not available?
The role of a deacon. I know there are churches
deacons,
and associations.
Elders.
Deacons mm-hmm. leading in a way that they're not biblically supposed to be.
Right, to the point where if you're elder-led, some of us would say, oh, no, that's not right. If we use deacons and treat them like elders,
right, yeah,
then that's okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's a little crazy. But so there are lots of things. So the question is not really who's right about these things. Obviously, like Preston alluded to, I am. You know, I can just tell you.
I thought we were solving the church's problems right here, right now.
Because some of these things.
This is chapter 2 of our book.
Right. Yes. It's becoming a big book. What we have to do is be able to live together. How sweet it is when brothers live in unity.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only live together, but also work together.
Yeah.
You know.
Do ministry together. And so let's say from the outset, there are some things that we should divide over.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there are some things that are non-negotiable.
The Trinity.
The Trinity is non-negotiable. And from the history of mankind, certainly the history of the church has said, okay, here is how we understand what the Bible teaches about God. And this is, if you don't believe this, then you're really talking about someone or something else than God. That's something to divide over. The physical reality of God in the flesh, the nature of Jesus, 100% God, 100% man, the bodily resurrection, the literal death and bodily resurrection of Jesus from the grave, on the cross and from the grave. These things, if your pastor gets it wrong, if your pastor gets it wrong, this is one of those times when it's legit to start talking about a different church, or removing a pastor, God forbid. But if somebody in your church starts to espouse these things, these are reasons for church discipline. These are important issues. Not that the other ones aren't important. They say, I mentioned a phrase to these guys that I have stolen from Dr. Al Mohler, which is theological triage. And that is identifying primary, secondary, and I love using this word, tertiary issues. So now I've worked in tertiary. There you go. That's how it works.
That's your vocab word for the day.
Yes, yes. Look it up. Wear it out. Primary are things that make you a Christian or not. Right, and so some of those things, I don't know, is there another one? That's a really short list, honestly.
It is, yeah.
And there may be some things that we're leaving out, but that's a pretty short list. There's a lot of variety in the family of God that, at the end of the day, we'd say, but they believe in the person of Jesus, the salvation, saving work of Christ, and therefore, therein, we disagree about an awful lot, but we're brothers. Mm-hmm. We're brothers and sisters.
And we can even look at that, like, across denominational lines when you talk about, Presbyterians and others who have the Trinity but do those secondary things that are different. And we can look at that and say, well, those are our Christian brothers and sisters. The secondary issues are the things that we go, well, we'll feel comfortable at the Baptist church other than the Presbyterian church.
And so that's the definition, right? Secondary issues are those things that divide us significantly enough that it's probably best if we worship in separate groups, if we work together day in and day out in separate groups, because we have a very different understanding of certain points of the Bible, but we would still agree they're Christians.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there may be still some things that we could work together in. Just recently, the passing of Billy Graham. If you've ever been in an area where a Graham Evangelistic Association crusade came through, you've seen cooperation of churches who disagree about an awful lot, but they came together because the gospel was centered and because we're here about evangelism. And when they get done with that, you have to determine how you're going to follow up. But these secondary issues are things that, denominations come out of. Mm-hmm. Mode of baptism. It's desperately important. It's not so important that I think you're not a Christian if you were baptized incorrectly, but it is something that if you and I disagree about it, we're going to butt heads so significantly and so often every time somebody comes to faith in Christ and we talk about what's their first step of obedience, then at this point it's better for us to say, hey, why don't you do that and I'll do this and we'll have our own spots. So those, I don't know what else is in there. Mode of baptism, understanding of the Lord's Supper, symbolic versus literal.
Right.
If you have questions about this, get in touch with me. I have these written down. Rob Phillips has a great resource on this, and would like to actually have him come and preach this message, which he's done a couple times. I've been present for that. But I have these written down. Like you said, primary, those are deal breakers.
Right.
Those, like, between being saved, not being saved, knowing who God is. Secondary, denominations. And the tertiary is things that happen in the church.
Right.
Splitting hairs sometimes.
And that's really where we want to talk, because these are things, truthfully, my pastor, Frank Whitten, and I if we don't have separate views, different views, maybe we have a different level of certainty. I think about the end times. He probably has, as the experience he has in ministry, he's solidified in, I think, the rapture is going to happen here, the tribulation is going to happen here, the millennium is going to happen here. And I'm like, you know, I hope that, but I'm not too sure of this. This doesn't cause us a problem. We could disagree, and I could even, we team preach on Sunday nights, and I could say, yeah, I'm not as convinced. I hope Brother Frank's right that the church is going to be raptured out before the tribulation. I'm not entirely convinced of that. I really want it to be true because I'd like to be out of here for that. But we're okay with that. And I think that's the point of this. So now that we've listed those things, I think that's the point of this is to say, okay, how do we live with the third in line, the tertiary issues? How do we get along?
Okay, we place the toilet paper roll a certain way. That's the way it has to be. Absolutely.
Over the top. It can't go underneath.
That's the way my wife told me that it has to be.
Well, no.
That is the most important factor.
The sad thing about that, and we all joke about that, but a church has split because of that issue.
Lord.
And that's where we don't want the church to go.
Right.
Is where
that's
we
not
split.
A gospel issue.
And it's not.
That's not even a worthwhile issue.
It's not.
Are there quaternary issues? Because that's got to be one of those. You know, that's just dumb. But we end up dividing on some things.
Well, and it's not even just dividing, because I don't think it brings pain to God that there are people that know Jesus and go to a Presbyterian church, and there are people that know Jesus and go to a Methodist church or to a Baptist church or to a Christian church. I think what brings pain to God is when people in those individual churches say, you are wrong because you sing those songs. You are wrong because you don't even preach about the end times. You are wrong because of whatever. And so it's we gang up on our brother or our sister in Jesus when we're supposed to care and love that person. And there's plenty of room for debate. There's plenty of room for discussion. But when we make statements that are so strong that it disrupts and in some places destroys the unity of Christians.
Well, go ahead. But I had that happen to me a few years back. I mean, a while back. Not in Missouri. I'll say that. So me and another pastor disagreed on the end times. He was pre-trib rapture, all that. And I'll be honest, I don't think I've taken a position just because I was burnt by it. I kind of don't care, you know. When I hear the trumpet, I'll hear the trumpet. But he pulled me aside one day after an executive board meeting for our association, and he goes, I cannot call you a Christian because you don't believe in the pre-trib rapture.
That didn't happen in our association.
No, I said not in Missouri. No,
okay,
no.
I'm re-clarifying.
So, and my response was, I'm done. I'm done with the association. I'm done with you. Because I don't need that in my life. And if you are going to make such a statement like that, to say, you're not a Christian because you don't agree with me on this subject and won't hear any debate or talk about it, I just don't have time for that. You know, it separated us. But, and I'll say this, I was trying to mend the relationship up until that point. And then I just said, I got to walk away. Because you took it that extra step. You made it a primary issue. I just want to say that.
And it's something that our culture is in the habit. I heard it said this way recently. It seems like our cultural language is outrage. If you're in social media.
It is on Facebook.
Right. Social media is a great spot for this.
Or
because
certain news channels.
These things that could, and news channels, these things that could broaden our horizons, these things that could help us understand where people who disagree with us come from, they end up being echo chambers because we fill our feed or our friend list or whoever with people who agree with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we all decry this. I say all. Lots of us are upset with this in what we term the liberal media. They all sit in their own circles with the people who agree with them, and so therefore they always represent that point of view. We rail against the liberal media, but frequently we do the exact same thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's not that we, you know, intentionally say they're wrong or whatever. It's just that we find people who agree with us. We tighten that circle or even just fill it with more people, and eventually it was like, well, this is right. This is the only way. This is the only way to think.
Well, and I think, too, you know, so many of us forget, and I'm not meaning to be that guy, but, you know, in John 13, when Jesus is talking to them, he says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. And when we disagree with each other within a church or within an association or denomination or whatever, we are showing the world that we aren't Jesus' disciples. Because we're not showing love for one another. And I remember, wasn't that St. Louis, the Southern Baptist, was that in Phoenix, when we had the big faux pas with the white supremacy and voting on that and all that stuff? I think so. So I just remember thinking, why are we arguing about this? This seems crazy. And you could see it when you read. I read a CNN reported about it. It had all these news outlets that are talking about it, and I just thought, we have failed miserably in this area. And then they're thinking, you know, then they start to peer in what else have we done? And it's the same thing with this run up to the president that's going to happen in Dallas with, you know, one from this group and one from that group, and we're pitting them against each other. And you get on, you know, websites, and you're thinking, why are we arguing about this? This is not worthwhile. Mm-hmm. Neither one of them is advocating that we stop preaching the gospel. Neither one of them is advocating that Jesus isn't the only way. I mean, when you look at the primary issues, neither one of them is changing those.
Right.
I just, it's very confusing.
And so I think that points up something that one of the methods that we try to get around this, if we are those who, I don't want to have any conflict, I want everybody to get along, is that we just slowly try to not have an opinion.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's terrible. Right? Because truthfully, I do have an opinion. And it is important if we just get to where we don't have an opinion about anything. You know, here's a preacher illustration. Unity around nothing is a donut, which I like donuts. But it's not very nutritional. It's not very good for you, right? It's easy. It's palatable. It's got icing on top. That's all fun. But it's nothing.
No, we need a donut. Why didn't
we? Should have brought donuts.
Can't bring that
up. You know, it's nothing. We have unity because of something in the center. We have unity because of Jesus. He's bigger than this. And so my relationship with you is bigger than this particular debate. But that needs to start in, you know, I disagree with Martin about something. We, just for those of you who are not in the know, several of us, and Martin and I and Preston have all been a part of this, we take a trip to North Dakota in the spring. We term it the pre-trip, which is weird because it's a trip. It's not before a trip. It is a trip. But anyway, we spend a tremendous... Oh, Will's been part of this, too. Sorry, didn't mean to leave you out.
I'm the only one left out.
It's just
out.
Brad.
Yeah.
So
back at choir again.
Yeah. So we talk about a lot of things. We're in the car a long time, and we talk about a lot of things. And some of the things I go, man, you're really smart. How can you be so wrong about this? Right? But at the same time, when I get the most out of that, it's because I think, wow, Martin and I disagree about this, or Will and I disagree with it. But I have a tremendous amount of respect for Will, the way he has thought about this, or just Will as a person. So when he says something that I disagree with, I don't just say, wow, what an idiot. I say, wow, why does Will think that? And I think that's part of the thing that we have lost, is to say, no, They're not stupid or just wrong. They have thought about these things, and they've come to a different conclusion. Why is that? What can I learn from them? And that seems to me to be sorely lacking. And I'm guilty of the same thing. Somebody disagrees with me about a political issue or about a secondary theological issue or tertiary. I think, well, really, I've read more about this than you. I know more about that. If you thought about this. I had a friend. I've used that phrase intentionally because I had a friend long ago who he didn't realize he was doing it, but I realized as we were talking about things that were semi-important, was in college, so you talk about this, the time of life where you talk about ideas, he would start sentences all the time with, if you think about it, this. And I slowly realized, wow, so if I disagree with you, I'm a knucklehead. You know? And that, I got the chance to talk to him about that, and he's like, oh man, I didn't mean to say that. And I was like, right, but you see this, right? And I begin to see it in me where I say, dude, it's not because they just didn't think about this. Now, maybe I do have some information. I mean, I've heard Martin say more than once, I need to straighten these guys out on this. Right?
It's been my mission in life, and I'm working on it. It's still a work in progress, but I'm working it.
Because, yeah, I do believe these things, but they're always, I ought to always have in my mind, I got some stuff I could learn about this. Even if I don't change my mind, I could learn something from the way you think about this issue or not.
I think one of the skills that we're missing in the church is knowing how to debate on something rather than divide on it.
And humility.
Yeah, exactly. And we got to be able to have people, especially as we're gathered around here, we're pastors, this is a brotherhood and stuff, but have other men come to us in that David and Nathan thing and say, you're wrong. And have that humility to say, okay, yeah, I am.
Right.
But to debate, and sometimes we walk away and we're not together, but like you said, we can walk away and say, you know what, I respect that brother even more because... Right. He's passionate about it, but he didn't do it in a way that was trying to kill me. But he's passionate about his stance. That's, you know, God has been working in his life, and he's working in my life, and maybe I need to look at it a little bit.
Well, one phrase that has helped me to some extent, and I don't know if I need to use it more or not, but is to say this, as I understand it, and then I state how I understand it. Instead of saying, well, this is why you're wrong, or you take it to the other extent, and this is why I don't even know if you're saved, because you can get inflamed, and then we're mad at each other, and then we say things, and then our unity has been crushed, where it's completely true if I say, this is how I understand it. This is why I came to this conclusion. Perfectly true. If I make you come to my conclusion, even though that's really what I want you to do, but if I make that to happen, then I've pushed in a direction and not trusted the Holy Spirit to speak and say, you know what? If it's true, and we're brothers in Christ and we want the truth, let the Holy Spirit do His work.
And I've noticed that where Martin and I are in staff meetings with Gary at First Baptist, and I've noticed he does that, and I need to adopt that because it does change the way you respond. As instead of saying, you're wrong, but as I understand, oh, well, if you understand it this way, this is how I understand it, and then you can both kind of maybe come a little bit towards each other or say, man, you understand it differently than I do. That's fine. It's not a deal breaker.
What I found is as I read through the Bible, there are some verses on a read and a light comes on. I say, that's why he thinks that way. It's because of this verse. Now, I, you know, in my theological suitcase, I look at that. I carry that verse around a little differently than they do. But I at least see, I understand. They didn't make it up. Yeah, this is right. A biblical idea they've got. I just don't carry it that way.
And maybe this is a point specifically for us as pastors, as teachers, as leaders in the church, and not everybody's in the same thing, but we're in the habit, to a certain extent, if we're called upon to teach or to preach, we need to be sure of the things that we teach or preach. And so we get in the habit of communicating in a way not... Hopefully, Brad, not without humility. I couldn't. Unhumbly is not a word, right?
I make up words all the time.
not arrogantly, but we need to teach the Word of God clearly, and so we need to study, and we need to come to these things, and we need to share with our people and help them think about that. So we get in this habit of communicating from the pulpit or from the Sunday school teacher's chair or the whatever, and we don't realize that came across in my personal speech mm-hmm. about something I don't feel the same about. This is just how I talk. So my own personal experience, I'm better than Martin. I'm going to use an example that's bad on me. Martin only uses examples that make him look good. I'm going to use one that makes... He's just nodding. You can't see that. But
maybe I just don't have examples of what I look at. It's a thought to consider anyway. You can consider it.
Yeah, so I was in, before the church has been several years ago, I was in a church where I was just in Sunday school, and we were talking about something, and I kind of made my point of what I was thinking about, and a lady across the room said, well, but I have this experience, and that's, you need to think about this. And I said something that didn't seem momentous to me. I said, you know, I hadn't thought about that before. I really need to think about that. That's an interesting point. And what happened was, her face, like, lit up. And she looks at her husband like, oh, my gosh.
So you said that in a non-sarcastic
way. In a non-sarcastic way. Yeah, sure. I was being genuine. That's
how I would have said it. That's good.
hard for people to imagine
wow,
me.
Wow, I never thought about it that way before.
Right. But all of a sudden, I thought, wait a minute, what was that? Why was me saying, I'll think about that. You've said something to me that's important that I need to think about that I didn't think about before. Why was that such an event? Why did that impress her so significantly? Well, because I don't usually say that. Because I realized that I was portraying something that I didn't really mean. But I was in the habit so much, like I say, and I think as leaders and teachers, we need to remember that sometimes we speak from on high, with my air quotes that you can't see on the radio. We speak in such a way like, I just delivered this word to you, and that's not what we meant. And so we have to be very conscious of saying, as I understand it, or whatever. And the other thing with that interestingly has come up a couple times here in just the last couple of weeks, is the idea of a blind spot in my knowledge. Mm. It's not a problem to have a blind spot. It's a problem not to acknowledge a blind spot. I have a blind spot in my car between the passenger side mirror and my peripheral vision. That's not a problem. The problem is if I don't look back there before I change lanes, mm-hmm. right? And so and we all have blind spots, that's the thing, and it's hard to know where they are, right? I mean, a car, everybody knows where the blind spot is, but we don't frequently know. You don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Yogi.
Wow. It's
yeah. profound, right?
What just happened?
But that's the opportunity when we discuss things about which we disagree is to say, okay, wait a minute. Maybe there's some things I don't know. Maybe there's some things I don't understand. Maybe there's some things that he has thought about, aspects of this that I haven't thought about before. Or maybe, as I'm afraid frequently happens in disagreements, maybe we're saying the same thing, we just say it so differently, and we've argued with other people about it that I end up arguing with you because I think you disagree with me, and wait a minute, we're in the same spot. How did we get so angry about being in the same spot? You know?
I think also one of the blind spots, and this is something for me, is also knowing what personality you are when you come into those debates. I know for me, I'm a peacemaker. I grew up in a family of peacemakers. And so we don't get into arguments. They make me uncomfortable. In fact, you can talk to some of our pastors. I've been in those situations, long car ride to North Dakota, and not said a word because two guys are going, kind of debating things. But I saw at the end of it, they're like, yeah, man, I will do ministry with you. And right. It was great because they worked it out. We were in an enclosed environment, and also walked away from that going, I need to learn more about what they just talked about because I didn't have a dog in the fight. I've also been in a car ride with pastors.
Arkansas, say.
Yeah. with, two guys. And I was literally in the fetal position praying because I didn't know if we, at the end of that car ride, if I was going to still have two pastors in our association. Because I was thinking, they're going to kill each other. And I'm losing two churches. I'm losing two pastors. And they kind of worked it out at the end. But for me, I'm that peacemaker. So these debates, they they cause a lot of angst for me.
Well,
but they also cause me to understand of there's things that I need to know more about. I need to challenge myself, and I need to ask, hey, why is it that you have that opinion? I don't know that much, so teach me. So I come from in the other way. There are other people. They're antagonists. They're looking for the fight. They're bringing stuff every time. You know, they're going to bring a strong opinion, and they're looking for a fight. And so you got to know who you are. Sometimes you got to learn. If you're the peacemaker like me, you need to learn more. And the other ones, if you're always bringing the battle to people, people aren't going to communicate with you. You're not going to have those relationships, and you're going to alienate yourself. And so that's a blind spot that I'm realizing in my life with it.
Or you need to make sure you smile at the end and say, I know we disagree, but we can still serve together, because otherwise if it gets to fists, it's just not good.
The thing with the North Dakota pre-trip, that you have a bunch of pastors in a bus for hours, we start talking about that stuff, you know, the differences and, you know, theology, stuff like that. But as soon as those doors open up, we go straight into the Great Commission mode, and we leave all that on the bus.
Because we're Great Commission Baptists.
Yes. That's a whole nother.
Be a great name, but whatever.
It would be, wouldn't it?
But we're not dividing on it. We have a place that we can debate, and it's...
We got our safe space.
Yeah.
Sounds like a reality TV show. You need to film it.
We have talked about I think that very thing. Yeah, it's
worthwhile. Although you probably change the way you guys act. Like, oh, I don't want anybody to know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know. It might change some people's opinion of us being their minister. That might happen.
Well, we watched your show, and you all got back. You're all fired.
But
just so you know,
Preston, that's a great word. Not only understanding my personality, but understanding those around me. If I engage in a debate with you the same way I do with Martin or with Will, that might be wholly inappropriate and really damage our relationship. If I don't put in my brain and you think, well, whose responsibility is that? Well, that's easy. Galatians says those of you who are spiritual are responsible to restore such a brother gently. Now, that's specifically in the ministry of reconciliation, of restoring someone who has been disciplined in sin. But I think that's instructive. Whoever is more spiritual is responsible for the knowledge they have. And so...
And not just the knowledge they have, but how they give that knowledge out.
Right. Well, and I mean, right? not just
the knowledge
about...
To be right in the wrong way.
Right. Not just the knowledge about the topic, but the knowledge about people. The knowledge about your responsibility. Because, you know, Preston's a peacemaker. On those assessments, I'm a task-oriented guy. I say it jokingly to people, and I'm going to say it jokingly now. I don't care about people. I care about getting the job done. It's not that I don't care about people.
Notice none of us are laughing.
I'm laughing nervously.
You can't see.
But right, because my bent is let's get the job done. And what can happen because of that? People get left in the wake. And I'll tell you, there's some phrases. I think I'm on a different topic now. I apologize for that. But there's some phrases that, well, you got to move with the movers. How about the body of Christ? how about we're in this together, and it's my job to build team and to build unity. And it is true that our world seems to be eaten up with this, that we're just going to be mad. That's what's going to happen. And there ought to be a certain extent of people, there ought to be enough evidence of people to say, you know, I don't believe like those church people believe, but man, the way they talk to each other, the way they engage on Facebook or Twitter, man, that's something I need to grab a hold of. We ought to be an example about that.
There's some Facebook accounts from our church that I just would wish I had a button to just shut down and say, you don't need to say anything else to these people about this topic because you are hurting Jesus in their view of who Jesus is because they know you follow him. Just like whenever I see, you know, a bumper sticker on the back of somebody's car that is not a sports team, but, you know, for something, and they're a terrible driver, or they throw a cigarette out the window, and it's like, you know, I'm a vegan or whatever. You're like, oh, you're a terrible representative of that group of people.
Right.
And I just think if we could help, if we could figure out a way to help people understand that, it would be very beneficial.
Yeah. And I've been trying to think of this other lady's name, and I can't think of it, but Justice Antonin Scalia. Obviously passed away about a year and a half ago, but there was a justice, a female justice, that passed away just before him.
I can't remember her name.
But Justice Scalia on the Supreme Court was obviously a very, or maybe it's not obvious, he was a very conservative justice. Mm-hmm. And this other lady was a very liberal justice. And when she passed, what came to light was that Justice Scalia and she had a great friendship.
Yeah.
And somebody asked him about it, because they're always on opposite sides of the cases, right? They're always writing different opinions. And somebody said, I understand you really get along with, you know, whoever this is. And I wish I could remember her name. Some of you are yelling it at the podcast right now, wishing I would think of it. But I was in the past. You're in the future. So that's not going to help. So they said, I understand you really get along. And he said, oh, yeah. What's not to like? Except her view of the law.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's great. You know, what's not to like except this one thing that we disagree about? That's, you know, and going into a debate of these issues saying, I love you and that's not going to change, you know. And so let me make sure, not only does that make it say, you know, what's the old terrible definition? Love is never having to say you're sorry. What an awful, awful, awful thought. But it ought to be, if I go into a debate with that idea, then I ought to say, and I'm not going to do anything in this debate to make it sound like I don't love you or that I don't get along. We're going to talk about this sometimes very passionately, but not in an attacking way or whatnot. And you know, there's something with that, too. Understand the people around you. There's some people, if you sit around with us, with this group of guys, you're going to hear some sarcasm offered good-naturedly, and no. We're gonna laugh.
Yeah, why is this?
Well, with everybody,
I don't
Brad.
Even know. But, well, I don't get to go on the pre-trip. So
right. But that group, yeah, that group in the van, and interestingly, when new guys come into that, we have, you know, like Will came the first time last year. We have to remember that we ought to be careful there. We need to understand where they're coming from. Some guys deal with that much less than...
Until you know how sarcastic they...
Right.
And
yes.
Then you just jump in there, too, and it's great.
Right. And that's cool when it works, but we need... I fear we end up saying things like, well, you need to toughen up, or you need to become like us, instead of us saying, well, hey, let me tone it down, because this obviously doesn't work well for you, and I want to be more gracious to you.
Yeah, so in the church, I mean, we need to learn to debate a little bit, to know some things, but to do it in a Christ-like manner. I mean, the world is watching us. And we need to create, like you said, Will, those safe places that we can do that. Our pastor actually on Sunday put a little thing in the bulletin, little flyer in the bulletin, basically asked the pastor. It's like, you know, quiz the pastor. And so on Wednesday nights, that's what he's going to do, is kind of cover those questions. That could be a safe place to debate some things.
Can you text in some? Because I want to text.
Sure. Yeah, can you give us Nick's number? I'd like him to get into.
Nick Drake number is...
I did not say your name, Pastor.
I did. Brad did.
But, Richland, correct?
Yeah, the address
what
is...
What time's Wednesday night services?
Meal starts at 5:30.
Okay.
There's even a meal now beforehand.
But, you know, we got to create those safe places. Sometimes that begins with the pastor of saying, hey, you know, if you there's something that I said, or if you have a question with what you heard from me preach, come talk to me. I want to talk with you. But we can't be unapproachable in that.
Yeah, it's better to talk with each other instead of just cutting off and saying, well, how dare you? And I'll even say this.
I don't believe that would
not. Well, that's it. I know I brought these boxing gloves. But I'll even say this to pastors as well, or anyone in any sort of leadership in the church. Even if you don't agree with somebody 100%, don't just cut that out of your library. Because you are doing yourself a bad. I'll just say it like that. Not as good with words as other people. But
you might be looking for injustice.
Yes,
doing yourself
there you
an
go.
Injustice.
But and I know for me, you know, I don't agree with everything Adrian Rogers has taught and stuff like that. Great man of God he was. And somebody asked me, what's the first thing you teach when you went to Rising Sun? Right off the top of my head, Adrian Rogers, what every Christian ought to know. And they're like, well, why'd you teach that? I'm like, because it's probably the best thing that a new pastor can teach to his congregation. This is what you need to know. And it's just like, that's the way we should be, is we can look across those lines and go, I don't agree with everything that, you know, they teach or write or whatever. And I had a teacher tell it to me like this: you're not going to stop eating fish just because you find a bone. Just pick the bone out and keep going.
Some of us might.
And you're wrong.
Oh. Well.
In this time of Lent,
are you willing to have
fish fries every Friday?
On the back of
we need to straighten you out on that, you know?
The Darwin fish eating the...
You know, and that's something I do want to touch on here very quickly is... You also need to challenge yourself to hear opposite views of what you are normal to, or listen to things, or read things. You know, one of the things that I really appreciate about you guys here is that you guys read vastly. Just talking with you guys read, and you read a broad spectrum of topics. I don't do that, and so I find myself sometimes getting very pigeonholed in what I know and what I say, because I'm not very vast. And that's something we need to challenge ourselves as a learner. You need to understand, what is my people actually, you know, if you're a pastor, what are my people actually learning? What is out there that is attracting their attention so that we can talk about it in the church? That should be that safe place. The church should be a safe place to have those conversations.
An example just came to me that I think is very instructive about this, because, yes, we get in as a pastor, as a growing Christian, somebody who's achieved some level of maturity, whether or not you're a pastor or a teacher, if you've been at it for a while and you've thought about these things, you can read some more broadly. I think a lot of these discussions, though, need to happen with people in the church, because there, inside the church, I have some safety bumpers for young Christians, right? The example that I thought of, and I know Martin and I have talked about this before, and we may have widely differing opinions on this resource. Resource is the wrong word. But The Shack, the book The Shack, and then the movie a couple years ago. So as a pastor, as somebody who's read a bunch of the Bible, The Shack makes me think of some things about God that I just hadn't considered before. And there are some things that I read and I go, wow, I need to think about that. And yet I would say, if you're a new Christian, I would rather you not ever come into contact with that. Because if you don't have a firmly grounded sense of what the Bible says about the Trinity, you could start believing things about this, and then you start reading the Bible with that view in mind rather than the other way around. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's good. We started this topic about conflict between believers, you know, things the church disagrees about. That's a great place to have these discussions, because with these people, we have the safety bumpers of, yes, I have read that's contrary to the Bible. You know, that's not a good idea here. Where in the realm of I just grab a book off the shelf and start reading it, maybe I don't have that much community around me. And so, there's some maturity things here that, you know, what do I engage? And when we have these discussions inside the body, we automatically have folks who are caring for new believers and folks who you know the context. Hey, this person came to Christ last month. Let's talk about something else, or let's get the first things first, and that sort of thing. So that just where these discussions happen and how they happen.
And I think it's also good, as we've talked about reading too, if you have an opinion or if you have a strongly held belief in something, to read up on it, to know how to talk about it, to maybe try to approach it from both sides so that you know where you stand and you know where others stand. And I think that really helps the discussions to say, well, you know, if I've never read The Shack, I'm not going to come to you and be like, well, you read it and you said it's worth, there's some things worthwhile. I'm not going to say, oh, well, you're just a horrible person because you read it. You know, that's just terrible, you know. But to say, well, I read it and I have a different opinion, you know, not to just argue for the sake of argument, because you're even if growing up your pastor said this is this and that is that, and you know, you just believe because that's where you are, I think it's always good to read and to learn more and to understand, try to understand both sides of an argument or both sides of the discussion.
So are we in agreement to wrap this one up?
Do we need to vote? A second.
At this point, let's just cast lots. You know,
we'll add to your list Robert's Rules of Order.
Oh, man.
That's something we can debate about.
Yeah.
Well, all right, that's enough.
Is that Acts 30?
We're cutting it off.
So thank you, guys.